Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, and this is your daily look at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. Today's show is the first part of a two-part conversation I had with ESPN Cleveland's Jordan Zerm. You can find him on Twitter at CleveZerm. He wrote a story about the new Cavs and how they've reacted to playing with LeBron and their reactions to seeing LeBron do the insane stuff he seems to do on a nightly basis. Jordan's story is in the show notes. Go read that, support him, give him a follow on Twitter, and check out all his work. He is a fantastic writer, one of my favorite people to talk to. Today's show is on his story, his take on Jeff Green and some of the other unknowns the Cavs have going into the playoffs, and a look at where the rotation sort of stands right now, with talking about Hood, Nance, Thompson, George Hill, Jordan Clarkson, all of the guys we have a lot to learn about. On Wednesday, you'll hear the second part of our conversation that talks about the importance of seeding, importance of what the Cavs are facing, the differences in this Cavs team and what they're facing versus years past, and how they might be tested in a new way this year, as opposed to the past years when they've had maybe one truly hard playoff series, and that being the Bulls series from the 14-15 season in the 15 playoffs. Also, as you go into this podcast, you're going to hear a clip from David Ramil. He's the co-host of Locked On Heat. I know Carl White, who the Cavs signed to a full-year contract on Saturday. They announced that they had signed Carl White to a deal for the rest of the season. From what I understand, he's someone that I think they might look at to play in Summer League and then to have to play next season on this team. He's a 6'8 forward who was with the Heat last year and then this year got hurt, got traded to the Hawks, was waived, and the Cavs originally signed him to a 10-day deal, didn't play him, but they have signed him, so he'll be on the playoff roster. He fills one of the two open roster spots they have, which they might use him with this week if they want to bring in someone in for some sort of locker room presence. But you'll hear David Ramil, you'll hear the intro music, then me and Jordan Zerm talking about his story and the unknowns about this Cavs team, and then you'll be hear us again on Wednesday. Have a great Monday. Talk to you again tomorrow with a recap of the Monday's Cavs-Knicks game. But here's David Ramil and myself and Jordan Zerm.
Well, Carl White never really made much of an impact in Miami, but will forever be remembered fondly because he joined the team midway through the 2016-17 season, right as the Heat began their incredible turnaround and finishing the year at 41-41 after being 19 games under 500. In fact, Okoro made his debut with the Heat when they won their first of 13 straight games, thus earning him the nickname 13 and Okoro. But the truth is that he didn't really play a significant role in that win streak, nor in Miami's second half success. What he did provide was a mixed bag of versatility, able to do a lot of things, but none of them particularly well. He'd give you some outside shooting, averaging around 1 3-point attempt per game and knocking them down at about 35%. He was a decent rebounder, pulling down 2.3 boards per game, but at just 200 pounds, he could be pushed out of the way fairly easily. As a defender, he was enthusiastic, and at 6'8", he had the length to make things difficult for opponents. When Hassan Whiteside missed a number of games during that season, Okoro's length was a convenient asset off the bench, allowing Eric Spoelstra to play him at any front court position in secondary units. Still, there were holes in his game. He wasn't much of a ball handler or playmaker, but that wasn't really required of him either. However, it was clear that was the next logical progression for him, and during this past summer league, Okoro was used frequently as a primary ball handler, bringing the ball up court, initiating fast break opportunities, and learning to score off the dribble. There were some nice flashes, and it looked like he had put on some muscle as well, making him a difficult cover, too fast for bigs to contain and too strong for smaller wings. Unfortunately, he only played in 6 games this season, including 4 starts, and we never really saw a large enough sample size to determine if he was ready to make a leap. All in all, Okoro was a nice player that benefited from joining a team that was peaking at the right time and has a well-established reputation for developing players. He absolutely has potential, but he needs a team capable of investing significant time in him in order to see that it's realized.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, Jordan, so you wrote this story that has, I think, a very good, perfect title for Bleacher Report called Newest Cavs Share Their Holy Shit Moment, LeBron Moments. This is a story basically about how people react to LeBron James and the moments they realize that they're playing with this guy who is incredible and is maybe the best player in the world. And it's a good season to do it and a good time to do it because of the turnover. You and I talked about this at the deadline. They have Jetty Osman as well, and they have this mix of guys that are all reacting to him in different ways and they're at different stages in their careers. When you were reporting this, who was the guy that you talked to that was the most insightful or kind of gave you the most relatable quote about this, or however you would say is what stood out to you the most from talking to these guys about this?
Yeah, I think it was Jetty, number one, because the first person I actually talked to was Jose Calderon for it. And I mean, he has really good quotes, and I think it's something where, like, when I went back and was transcribing it and like re-listening to it, I realized he gave more insight than I kind of originally thought. But the first, like, just initial reaction was Jetty, because one, when I asked him, he like knew immediately, like he didn't have to think. He just was like, oh yeah. And then it was just like the way, it's a bummer because sometimes I wish like you could include the audio clip of the quote, because the way Jetty said it was so funny. And I mean, like, he's got the accent and kind of, you know, sometimes he mixes up words, but like, it was just so funny how he kind of like voiced his reaction to LeBron saying, I'm not in good shape after having almost a triple double or whatever it was. And I remember like listening and just kind of laughing with Jetty, because it is like a ridiculous proposition to say to someone in the media, like, ah, man, I'm just super out of shape after you go out and have like a very typical amazing LeBron game. So I thought Jetty's was really good. And then I really liked Larry Nance's, because Larry Nance's reaction to LeBron is kind of just like my reaction to LeBron, or like the fans' reaction to LeBron, where it's kind of just like they're as mesmerized by it as we are, and they're like as surprised that people take it for granted as some of we are, or even like we just take it for granted from time to time anyway. Like when he was just saying about that game in Detroit, the quote I used where he was talking about he had a really good game and everybody was coming up to him in the locker room after the game and being like, wow, man, great game, Larry, you won this game. And like he obviously was excited about his game, but he was like, did you guys not see, like, I didn't win us this game. I played well, but LeBron had 33 and whatever it was, 9-9 or whatever it may be. So, and I thought that was so spot on, because like, I think we look for signs that new guys, especially this year with the new group, like we were really looking for signs of, okay, starting to get it, like with Rodney Hood, especially, in George Hill, like having a good game. It's like, oh, his contributions were huge. But then you just look at LeBron's stat line and you're like, it wouldn't have mattered if LeBron hadn't have dropped 35 points and 10 rebounds and 8 assists. And it's like that every game, like without LeBron's contributions, doesn't really matter what anybody else is doing, they're probably going to lose that game. So I thought when Larry just like couldn't, but like was weirded out by the attention he was getting when LeBron had this like masterful game, I thought that was like so on the nose about how we sort of take in LeBron in 2018.
The Nance thing, I think, hits home for me, considering going to games and seeing at least the early part of Nance. He's been sneaking out a little bit more recently because he just hasn't been playing as well after that injury. But the first couple of games he played in Cleveland, and this was assumably like this on the road as well, because I feel like every time I watched Fox Sports Time Ohio, he was part of their postgame coverage. The TV cameras would rush to his locker and crowd around him, and there'd be a massive crowd, and you know this, having covered games, it wasn't quite as big as LeBron's scrum, because the LeBron scrum is like, unless you're there 10 minutes early and basically there as he's changing, you're not going to be close enough to get good audio.
Right.
There was literally a game where they had like, okay, with LeBron to have Larry go first. And I'm like, okay, this is out of hand a little bit, like that. But it speaks to like we get so excited about guys, and I think the Nance local thing with him being from here and being excited to be here, his brother playing for Revere, his dad being a Cavs legend, I think fed all into that. But I think Nance is kind of the perfect one, and he's so chill about it too, and just seems like a guy who is very aware of what the situation he's in, and just is taking things sort of, but also casually. Like he's the only player I think that regularly wears like a Cavs hoodie and sweatpants and a pair of athletic shoes out of games. Like pretty much every other guy is dressing up to some degree, whether not a suit, but you know, JR has his Gucci fanny pack right now, and Jetty had Coach shoes on the other night because Jetty's now Hollywood.
He's a superstar now.
Yeah, 100% a superstar. He's gonna get the takes now if he keeps missing threes like he did against Philly. But like how these guys are reacting is just so interesting. And with Jetty is also just this guy who is our fan avatar in a lot of ways because he's so earnest and he's just so like clearly excited about it, and he just is just like gushing about it in a way that. It's interesting to see that on this team because this is the first time they've had a rookie who has been worth us talking to, frankly, and bluntly, after when he pretty on a fairly regular basis, considering. And he actually kind of has gotten more comfortable with talking. Atis has no interest in talking right now. He had the game he had 2 weeks ago when he had like 16 or whatever. He was the Ahmad's post-game interview and he's like, thanks guys for coming. And he just walked away. Like he had no interest in participating in this. Jetty sort has gotten more comfortable with it, and he's just the fan avatar for the casual caster and the rabid Cavs fan that is looking at this team and is like, LeBron's incredible. I'm very excited to watch this guy, and isn't really taking it for granted, and is kind of soaking, I think, in as much as he can.
Yeah, and I think something he said to me that I didn't include this story, but he kind of just said, like, you know, you hear this all the time, but from Jetty, like you said, it's so earnest when he was just like, you know, LeBron makes you look so good when you're playing on the court with him. And I think that is especially meaningful coming from Jetty, who came from, you know, playing in Turkey. Like he's coming to a completely different, just different game and different level of basketball than he's experienced for his entire career. And so, and we've seen, you know, Jetty obviously has his shortcomings, and you put that on top of having to adjust to a completely new style of game and more physicality and more just better players and all of that. Like that's a really tough transition for a guy as young as Jetty is to make. And he's right. Like LeBron has thrown him some passes and gotten him some open looks that, you know, he's not getting playing in the EuroLeague or playing in Turkey. And so like when it comes from Jetty saying, you know, he makes me look so unbelievably good on the court, it really, it's something that you hear a lot, but then like you fully understand what that means when it comes from him, because, you know, he's not getting those looks or some of those easy passes for a layup from guys he was playing with over in Turkey. And so it just makes it completely different. And like when he's in awe and when it looks like he's in awe of LeBron, like he legitimately is in awe. And that's, he's part of the inspiration I had to write this story, because his reactions on the bench, especially in games when he wasn't even playing, his reactions to LeBron, I remember just like, you know, when they show a cut of the bench after LeBron did something and the opposing coach called a timeout, like you just saw it in his face. And he's just having like this wide-eyed, incredible experience. And I think that's so cool, because like you said, there hasn't really been a rookie on the Cavs that has been getting actual playing time and making a meaningful contribution in a while. So he's a great guy to talk to about, because he can give you some really good insight into it. Yeah, it's like what it's like for a guy to come over who's probably heard about LeBron for his whole career, but he's overseas, and then he comes to the Cavs and he's a rookie and he's playing with them. So it's just kind of a fascinating dynamic.
He's also the leader this year of the best Cavs Instagram, because he had that one of him and him and Tristan's like, we can roar like lions or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, all right. Yeah. He's like clearly just so excited about it. This LeBron-ness, this that maybe we've been over, not overlooking, but maybe not understanding just how insane he's been. And some of that I think is just because the Cavs are kind of an unknown, and it's just hard to. It's just like we've seen LeBron be crazy before and all these different things that make us take it for granted. But what does that say about where this team is headed with the playoffs, two games, regular season games away, with either a 4-5 against the Pacers or one of the teams fighting for position in the bottom, and just so many, frankly, unknowns? What does it mean that LeBron is doing this now at 33 with all these minutes on him, maybe having his best offensive season, I think I would argue his best defensive season since coming back, that he keeps just responding to these big moments even when other guys aren't, and they're having all these other issues like Rodney Hood being in and out of the lineup, George Hill getting hurt, Kyle Korver missing a bunch of games, Nance and Thompson's issues? What does that mean that LeBron is playing at this level? Is it really being the one non-unknown, the one thing we know can hold true, aside from like Kevin Love, but like LeBron being the ultimate truth of this team, with everything else, Ty Lue, the one thing I forgot about because there's just so much going on. Yeah. What does it mean to have LeBron at this level right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's just surreal. And I honestly think the past two games have illustrated it better than anything. The game against the Wizards and then the game against the 76ers where they for the Sixers game, they were down from the start. Wizards game, I think they got up 15 and blew it and then had to come back down from 17 or whatever it was. But like you see this moment when LeBron's kind of coasting a little bit or he is kind of like, you know, doing his thing where he's like, I'm going to let other guys fail to see that we're not playing the right way or whatever it may be, his little mind games that he sometimes plays on the court. But then he decides, and especially the 76ers game, I mean, they're down 30 and he just decides enough, you know, like we're getting embarrassed enough. And he goes into this mode where you're just not going to be able to do anything to stop him. And it was the same thing against the Wizards where he scored or assisted on their last, like, you know, 12, 15 points in the middle of that comeback where he's just putting his head down and going to the rim and you literally cannot do anything. And that to me is just so crazy how he can just decide at a snap of a finger, okay, it's time now for me to go into God mode. And he just does it like, and it without fail, he just does it. Like very rarely does he have a game where he decides like, okay, I'm going to play to the peak of my abilities and doesn't actually do it. And I just remember watching that Sixers game and I'm glad I didn't turn it. I was so close to turning it off and I stuck with it a little longer and I'm so glad I did because yeah, he just turns it on and it's such an unbelievable thing to watch where all of a sudden you're like, oh, he is unstoppable. Like, what are you going to do? So I think that illustrates just how amazing he's been this season. I mean, LeBron's always felt like a guy that when he wants to, you're not going to stop him. I mean, that's been throughout his career, but it's amplified when he's 33 years old and he's in his 15th season and he's played what feels like millions of minutes on the basketball court and like his body should be breaking down and it's not. And he's better than he ever was, like all of that. And especially like you mentioned this season where he has had to so many different lineups, his coach is out. There's like, you know, stuff outside, like just being worried about your coach and whether he's like seriously sick or having serious like scary health issues and Kyle Korver having to go through what he went through and the trades and Isaiah Thomas, like just so many things have happened this season that I don't know how you block out those distractions and continue to play at the level that he's playing at. And I think that we absolutely, and the NBA takes it for granted, and because it's just like it's every night, and so it's like what is there to kind of bring up to talk about it, even though I enjoy just every night being like, well, that was insane, you know. But like I think people just get fatigued by greatness, I guess, which is like a crazy thing to say, but I don't know how you can look at the season and not say anything other than he's just like the greatest player in the world. I just don't know how you look at him and then think what he's doing is anything kind of less than that.
It's just when you watch him play defense sometimes and you're just like, all right, LeBron is just he's just like not trying on that end. And it's just very hard to like look at it as anything other than that. And, you know, like it's sort of like, it's not a perfect comparison, but on Sunday, I was watching the Madrid derby in between Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid. And Cristiano Ronaldo, who's just also in a similar way, is just like this freak specimen like LeBron, was like, right. Like right before Atletico Madrid scored, he was just pointing at a guy that like he could have like tried to make an effort. And he's just like, no, go do that. And I feel like that's LeBron all the time. Like, I feel like LeBron is just like annoyed at bad defense and like is annoyed when like Jeff Green gets beat off the dribble. But he's like, that's not my concern right now. And he does have almost too much to do, right? Like, and I don't know how to offset that. And it's almost like the idea of Jeff Green is like kind of what they need, but they need someone who's like, he's been really good. And he just scored like a crap ton of points against the Sixers out of nowhere, but they like need someone better to kind of maybe take that off. And Paul George would have been really perfect at that. Mm-hmm. With the playoffs coming up, with everything we know about the team and how little we know, what for you are the unknowns about this team that concern you the most? Is it Rodney Hood? Is it George Hill? Is it the rotation? Is it what's going to happen with Nance and Thompson? Is it Ty Lue? What to you is the thing you look at this team and say, I have no idea, and that scares the crap out of me in terms of evaluating how far they're going to go?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it honestly is Ty Lue, but in the way of lineups, because if there's one thing, and people are so like, I didn't even realize how like split people are on Ty Lue and
it's
how they
insane.
Feel about him.
It's just insane.
It's crazy.
Jason Lloyd, I want to just shout out this tweet really quick, and because this is one of the few good things on Twitter.com. Twitter's just terrible for Cavs. Just insane. But he tweeted
it's
this.
So bad.
He tweeted this on Saturday, like in the wee morning on Saturday after they after the game. He said, "I love you, Cleveland, but the only Cavs coach y'all have liked in the last 15 years couldn't keep track of timeouts or diagram an ATO, and the Cavs tried 3 times to fire him." That is, of course, in reference to David Blatt, and David Zabok. Who writes for Athletic and used to run for the Sword, said, responded to this, they liked him because he would yell at the media. I think that's like true, because Blatt was very combative, but he said crazy things. He did mesh with LeBron. It feels like a lifetime ago that they were in Brazil and like Mike Miller was hyping up the David Blatt offense in the preseason.
Said he was an offensive genius.
Yeah. Yeah. That is how far we have come in this. I have issues with Ty Lue as a coach. I think his stubbornness is a problem. I think there is a reliance on certain things. I sometimes just don't know. His in-game adjustments aren't always my favorite thing in the world. I think he's a better coach in the playoffs, and I think he's very good at certain things like ego management. He's good at dealing with his guys and getting a lot out of certain guys. But and he's a bit more adaptable this year. In actually playing a rookie, I was very skeptical he was going to play Jetty at all, but he actually put some trust in a Jetty and seems to believe in that guy to some degree,
yeah.
And that's really refreshing. He's not my number one, though, but what else to you is your concern aside from Ty Lue, and continue what else you have to say about Ty?
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a lot of it, but just, you know, the one thing that kind of sticks out to me is that, it was very brief, it was short-lived, but it took kind of Larry Drew to finally, and you know, maybe Ty Lue would have done this if he hadn't have taken his leave of absence, but I don't think he would have. It took Larry Drew to put in what a lot of us have kind of been clamoring for in the starting five of George Hill, Rodney Hood, LeBron, Larry Nance, and Kevin Love, and a lineup that I think is by far the best option for the Cavs to trot out as their starting five. And like, Ty Lue really likes Jeff Green, and part of me understands it because he's versatile. He can guard whoever, he can switch, and he's had just enough good offensive games where like you said, the idea of Jeff Green is enjoyable to think about, but it's not really the reality. And I don't mind playing Jeff Green. I do think he's useful, and he eats up minutes, and he lets people rest and sit. Like, I think he's great for that, but Ty Lue just was not taking him out of the starting lineup and not putting in what I think is fairly easy to see the most optimal starting lineup. And so Larry Drew did it, and then in that game, George Hill twisted his ankle, and we haven't seen him since, although hopefully he'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll see what happens then. But that stuff just worries me in terms of I do think, like you mentioned, the stubbornness of Ty Lue. I think he sometimes just doesn't – like he just doesn't want to change something just out of principle. And I think that's a really bad idea, because like he'll do it in game. He just won't do it to start the game. And it's just not something I understand. The Sixers game, when they're getting blown out because of their speed and Kyle Korver couldn't keep up with some of their guys off the dribble. And that's when he kind of put Jeff Green at the four and Kevin at the five, and they went small, and that's, and they put Jetty in. And that's what allowed them to kind of have that comeback. So like he'll do it. He'll like put kind of lineups he hasn't really tinkered with before in there when it's necessary. I just don't fully understand why he doesn't do it at the beginning of the game or earlier. And I think that is something that is really dangerous to do with the playoffs, because you get down early in the playoffs and it's just you're playing better teams. And it's just so I just think it's a lot harder to climb a mountain of 20, 25 points. So I would say that's my main concern. My second thing is, honestly, I think it's Larry Nance and whatever is going on. And I do think there's something too. Jason Lloyd a couple days ago pointed this out, and I tweeted this, that Larry Nance, since he sort of injured his hamstring and was out for a couple games, but then came back. So he wasn't out that long. His numbers since then have just been pretty abysmal. And he just sort of seems like he's been a real non-factor in some of these games. He was a complete non-factor in that Sixers game until he almost tipped the ball in at the end to tie the game and sent it to overtime. But like, I think the Cavs really need Larry Nance because outside of LeBron and Kevin Love, you're just not sure where the third production is going to come from. And this isn't to say that Larry Nance needs to be going out and scoring 20 points, but if he's scoring under 10 points and he's grabbing only a couple of rebounds, like you can't have that from him. You need more. And he's certainly capable of more, especially when he's on the court with LeBron James. Like, those two have certainly quickly developed some nice chemistry off the pick and roll. And so to see him sort of disappear over these past couple weeks have been kind of jarring. And the rebounding numbers against the Sixers were atrocious, and him not having a good game sort of coupled with Tristan kind of fading and kind of falling off athletically, whether it's because of the injury or something else. You can't have your only guy that's going to be rebounding be Kevin Love. And so you just need Larry Drew for a lot of little things, and just being a threat on pick and roll and being a threat for alley-oops and all that stuff. So that actually really worries me, is if he's not going to be right for the playoffs, because you just need him, because you just don't know what you're going to get from Rodney Hood. You don't know what you're going to get from George Hill. You still don't know on a nightly basis what you're going to get from a lot of the guys that they're still trying to work into this lineup and figure out how to best use them. And I think, like, it's simple to understand where Larry thrives. Like, his game is very easy to understand. He's very good at what he does, but it seems like this hamstring injury is really hurting his ability. So that actually worries me the most.
Yeah, I will add real quick on Nance and Thompson. Ty Lue said after the Wizards game that they basically are going to have to pick one of them to play at some point because they're starting Green. That is ultimately an issue in starting Green, because if that puts you in that situation where you cannot anything with your rotations and you just feel like you're stuck in that regard, I get it. And look, they're starting Jeff Green because they're thinking about how they want to deploy him, not necessarily against Toronto, but in the finals. Like, that to me is what that move is about. It is about having him on the floor to guard Kevin Durant or to guard James Harden. As crazy as that sounds, I think that's what it is. I don't think they trust Hood to do it. They don't want LeBron to do it. So Jeff Green's kind of the guy. And look, I think it could be a situation where they have to play both Nance and Thompson, just because who's going to play better on a given night? Nance has to, I think. I think Nance has stepped out on guys and defended guards better in a way that Thompson really used to be good at. And I think he's just worn down. That's my theory. I think the finals runs have to have impacted him more than some other guys because of his size, because of his game. Because he played so many games or never had a rest or anything like that. Nance is probably just a little bit fresher, but he has to get back to that form. And if he's not, I think you could see them both getting some DNPs, and that's a real problem. That's my number one. But I will say Hood is a concern for me as well. He just keeps having these little tick injuries. They don't seem to be anything serious, but there are things that knock him out for times. The back strain, this Achilles soreness. He hasn't, since that 11-point fourth quarter he had again, I can't even remember who it was against, but he hasn't played well in a couple weeks, really. Like, a very, very good game in a couple weeks. He's had a couple okay games and then has largely been invisible. I think they really need him. I think at the very least they need a combination of him, Korver, and J.R. Smith to all contribute sort of similar things in different ways. And if he's not there, you're basically hoping that J.R. can be back to the J.R. that he's been. I think he's been okay of late. And you're banking on Korver being able to hang defensively against certain teams. And I think it's a lot easier to hide him against Toronto, against, you know, Boston or Philly. I mean, I know Philly just had this issue, but maybe you can find the right matchup from there. But it's asking, if Hood's not good, they're just a little bit thin on the wing, and it puts Chetty into a position where he has to perform. And I think based on how he shot, I think teams are going to start ignoring him, and that in itself is a problem.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It just the overall inconsistencies of guys outside of LeBron and Kevin, because like when you had Kyrie, it was essentially, okay, he's going to struggle on defense, but you know that he's going to go for at least 20. And he has those games where he's going for 30, going for almost 40. Like, you knew you were going to get that scoring out of him, and you knew that every single night that he was going to get his points one way or another. And you just don't have that luxury now of having three guys that you knew you know, Kevin obviously had some inconsistencies, but you still knew, like, if you really needed it from Kevin as a third option, he was going to get you a double-double. Like, you knew that's what was going to happen. And now you take Kyrie out of that equation and you're trying to, you know, spread out that point total and that play between Hood and Korver and J.R. Smith and George Hill and, you know, like, this amalgam of guys. And that's, I think actually that's kind of opens my eyes to, yeah, you're just relying on guys who just have not shown the consistency. Like you mentioned Rodney Hood and the injuries, and this is something he's dealt with his whole career in Utah. He was frequently injured, and that's part of the reason why I think Utah was willing to kind of let him go despite how good he can look some days. And then you look at George Hill, who like was starting to play a lot better before he got injured, because of course that's what's happened to this team the entire season. But yeah, like are you going to rely on J.R. Smith to give you consistent play? You can't. I mean, this year has been his worst, I think. And you just, even though he's kind of looked more competent of late in that Wizards game, man, he had some defensive shortcomings where you just are like, where he's losing his man and he's balling it, that stuff he's been doing all year. So it's like, I can't rely on him. You just can't rely on anyone outside of LeBron and Kevin Love. And, you know, Jeff Green is such a he's just so polarizing, because that game against Philly was the perfect Jeff Green game. And I tweeted out his shot chart, because that is what I wish Jeff Green's game looked like every night, where, okay, maybe he's not going to hit 5 of 6 threes. He was hitting like 1 of 7 threes every night for about a month. But if he's hitting 2 of 5 or 3 of 6, you know, and then he's not taking those bad mid-range jumpers. Like when he is getting the ball, it's deep in the post and he's got a mismatch and he takes it to the rim like he did on JJ Redick and Marco Bellinelli. Like those are fine with me. And that game was fine, you know. And if he's going to miss a shot at the rim, then he's going to miss a shot at the rim. Fine, you live with that. You just don't want him taking those pull-up mid-range jumpers that he can fall in love with. So, like, if that's the Jeff Green that you can get, great. But again, it just goes to the inconsistency. You just don't know if you're going to get that type of game from him every night. So maybe in talking this through, the scariest thing is just, because what we touched on is just kind of the inconsistencies. Where when you had Kyrie, you didn't really have to worry about that. You knew you had your three guys every night. They were coming out. They were going to give you tons of scoring. And then you just all you had to hope was a couple guys hit some threes around them. And it's just not, that's not what it is anymore. They just need more. And they just haven't found that third option to be as consistent as you would like. So maybe that's the most scary thing as we kind of move forward here, is just like not knowing.
Noting that Kevin Love, by the way, since in the 10 around 10 games he's played since he's come back, it's like 9 or 10, he's shooting 45.8% from 3, which on 5.3 attempts per game, which is very good. He's averaging 9.4 rebounds a game and 15.1 points. He's had some very, very good games, had just one or two kind of iffy games, but he's been the closest thing I think they've had to, as you pointed out, to having something else consistent. So there was part one of my conversation with Jordan Zerm. Again, check back on Wednesday for the second part of that conversation, when we'll talk about all of the different aspects of this upcoming Cavs playoff run, what is different this year, and a whole bunch more about what's to come with this Cavs team. Always an interesting group to talk about. Find me on Twitter at CDibbenWrites. Find the pod on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs. And please go on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and review. That is the best way to support Locked On Cavs. And I appreciate everyone out there listening. We're going to be geared up for the playoff run. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow with a recap of Cavs-Knicks.